What's good, Mom Spaghetti fam? I'm your host, Keith Cohen, back with another special episode of Mom Spaghetti, the only show of its kind, dedicated entirely to introducing you to new music and artists, with some stories about them as we listen. I said special because I'm joined by a truly special guest, Adam Turley. I featured three of his songs in my top 100 of 2020, and even crowned him my favorite find of 2020, so you know my excitement is real. Adam stopped by Mom Spaghetti to help promote his new single, I Like That, and on the single, that sentiment is mutual. That'll be the first song in the episode, and then you'll get to hear about Adam's journey with music as we listen to some of my other favorite songs of his. Of course, after that, we'll jump into business as usual, from the non-Adam pick of the week through the variety of genres, and closing out with Adam's TBT pick from 1978. You might be surprised to hear what song this beat out for Record of the Year in the 1980 Grammys, and there's even more reason to stick around than just me TB teaching y'all about Adam's throwback. That's when he'll share his answer to the Mom Spaghetti signature question, what five albums he'd start his vinyl collection with. Unsurprisingly, he made some great choices, so make sure you stick around to hear all of that. I almost forgot to say, to any newcomers out there, welcome to Mom Spaghetti. It's great to have you as a part of the family. So for the episode listening itself, when you hear a song you like, first of all, yes, that's the point of the show. Second, peep the description of the episode real quick. In it, you'll find the names of the songs and artists in order, not to mention clickable links to the episode's playlist on Spotify and Apple Music, so you can add them directly to your library from there. We've got a hell of a show with the new Alexander 23, a collab from Sam Felt and Kesha, so you know it's going to be lit. Follow me on IG at Mom Spaghetti Pod, share with friends, and hit that subscribe button. And now, let's hang out with Adam for a bit. You ready, fam? Let's ride.
I got no issues, it's kind of nice. Like running water into a paradise.
Adam Turley, welcome to Mom Spaghetti. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, man.
Absolutely. How did you get started in music?
My mom used to direct this singing and dancing group. I grew up in Southern California. Both of my parents are from there. And my mom directed this group called Sunshine Generation. It was just like a children's singing and dancing group. Apparently when I was 3 or 4, I would beg my mom to be in it because all my brothers were in it. I did it for a while, and then I think we stopped doing it. From there, I just remember on Sundays in church growing up, I would love singing with the other kids. I just really enjoyed that. I remember when I bought my first CD of Backstreet Boys, Black and Blue.
That's a good one.
Yeah, classic. Then my mom put me in violin lessons. I took that for a while, and then I moved to Utah. I like that. Shortly after I moved to Utah, I started being really interested in playing the drums because one of my best friends had a drum kit at his house. So I would go over there all the time, and I remember learning my first songs on the drums. I remember one of the first songs I learned that I was like obsessed with playing was that song by 30 Seconds to Mars called The Kill. From there, I just got really obsessed with punk rock, post-hardcore music. I was in a screamo band with my brother in middle school. My mom made me quit because she thought that I was going down the wrong path. I was just this little dweeby 12, 13-year-old in this screamo band, so she was concerned.
Were you just playing drums, or were you doing the screaming / singing?
No, the funny thing is I wasn't even the drummer. Like, I played drums, but I wasn't the drummer because my brother's best friend was the drummer, and I came into the band later, right? They needed a keyboard player, and so I took the role of keyboard player.
Did you know how to play the keyboard, or were you just figuring
out? Not really. I, like, still don't really know how to... Like, I can play chords. I know enough piano to write a song on the piano or perform a fairly simple song on the piano, but I've never been designated key guy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was mostly just because I wanted to be in the band, and that's what they needed.
Okay, I was just curious if you were the one screaming, because I sort of would pay for a version of the problem where you're screaming, but but like just once.
Yeah, no, it was my brother. Yeah, I know. I should start practicing my screaming so I can make a screamo version. That'd be sick.
Agreed. But back to the musical journey.
When I was 15, I wrote my first song. I started singing and playing instruments and just writing songs. That was the point where I transitioned away from being a drummer and just started songwriting a ton. My biggest influence was John Mayer. I wanted to be John Mayer or be like him. Very singer-songwriter based. I loved being an emo boy in high school, sitting in my room and writing sad songs.
Adam, I have to hear about your first song.
Oh, gotcha. I wrote my first song after my 15-year-old girlfriend broke up with me.
She's the reason that you have a bipolar heart now, still, right?
Yeah.
The roots run deep.
Anyway, so she broke up with me. I don't even think we had been dating long at all, but she was my first steady girlfriend when I was 15. So I was really sad about it. That night, I was really sad and emo, and I wrote this song called Butterflies. It was about how could she do this to me. I was basically just telling her that she gave me butterflies. That's all over the place. You just have to hear the song. The next day, I skipped school, stayed home. I'm just feeling myself. I skipped school, stayed home, recorded the song in GarageBand, burnt a CD because that was a thing at the time. I made it to school right before the last bell rang, and I had the song on a CD in a Ziploc baggie with a note. I don't remember what the note said. Probably something really dramatic, truthfully. So I found her sister right after school. I said, give this to your sister, please. She gave it to her, and then I got a text within 15 minutes from the girl that had just broken up with me, and she said, hey, we need to talk. So we met at the park, and she got back together with me. She loved me.
Wow.
Yep, that's what happened.
And then you were like, music will always get me what I want.
Yeah, except for I had a few experiences after that that did definitely not work. So it doesn't always work, guys.
All right, so I cut you off. You were saying John Mayer, singer-songwriter, emo, sad.
Yeah.
This is high school, right?
Yeah. Actually, later in high school is when I really got into the whole jazzy pop singer-songwriter thing a lot. John Mayer, Jason Mraz, James Morrison was a big artist that I liked at the time.
James Morrison. At what point did you start singing and appreciating the sound of your own voice?
Like I mentioned, I sang in church growing up, but that wasn't necessarily solos as much. So I didn't really see myself as a soloist or like a singer until right before I wrote my first song. And a friend, my best friend and I were just messing around with music stuff on GarageBand in my room one night. At the time, YouTube was new, and there was this viral YouTube video of this guy covering Hey Ya by Outkast. It's just on the acoustic guitar. I really liked that cover, and so I learned how to play it on the guitar, and then I was just like, oh, I'm gonna try to record this into GarageBand and just sing it. I just started recording, and I was like, wait, this actually sounds really good. That was my first introduction to, oh, maybe I can sing, and maybe I should sing. From there, I just never stopped. Then it took me a few years when I was like 21 to finally get deep into producer mode, because I had made beats on GarageBand and music class at school.
You went to school for music, right?
I went to college for like 3 semesters, majoring in audio, but wasn't like a music degree.
Okay, I thought that audio was music, so...
Yeah, I mean, it has to do with music, right? But you could go like different directions with it. You could just be an audio engineer that does podcasts and dialogue stuff, or just sound effects for video games, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
most of the people were there for music though, right? It was just the engineering, nerdy side of music, which I love. But the program I was in just felt like a little outdated, and I was going full-time, spending lots of money and time, only to realize that I was learning more on YouTube than I was in class. And so I was like, I'm just gonna do this. Take this time that I was at school and use it to gain experience and practice and start working. So that's what I did. Around that time was when I was getting really into learning what it took to make solid, competitive pop music from my bedroom, because I didn't have a lot of money or budget for a studio. My whole life I thought I have to get into this big studio and pay tons of money and pay all these people to make my music sound good, right? But I was just seeing other people do it too, make really sick music.
You left school to pursue music full time, right?
Yep.
In the moment, how big of a deal did it seem?
I remember it being a thing. I don't remember it being like a big thing that I had to tell my parents and they were concerned or anything at all. First of all, my parents have always been super supportive of music, but it came about because I was in school and I wasn't satisfied with the program I was at. My actual plan was to go to a school called CRAS, the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences. It's a pretty respectable audio school in Arizona. I applied and I got in, I paid my deposit. This was spring of 2016. The plan was to go in December of that year and do this year-long program. I was telling a couple of engineer, music producer friends about this that were older than me. They were further along in their careers than me for sure. Kind of like mentors. I told them I was going to this school and both of them were like, dude, why are you going to audio school? You're an artist. Because I had played them some new songs that night. And they're like, you're an artist. Why are you trying to be a mixer? And I was like, you know what? You have a good point. I realized the only reason why I wanted to go to these schools was because I wanted to make my music, the songs that I was writing, sound professional. Which doesn't mean that schools wouldn't have helped, but they helped me realign my vision towards the artist thing. So I ended up not going to that school and just dropping out of school and just pursuing music on my own with the help of the internet after that. I know this is unsolicited, but if anyone's listening that was thinking about music school, I would say this. If your parents are going to pay for your school, then it might be worth it to go to school, but it's not worth it to go to audio school or music school, come out of it, be $20,000, $30,000 in debt, and then be in the music industry where money is already hard to come by. I just think that's setting yourself up for failure. That being said, if you have a scholarship, if your parents are paying for you, then I think that's great. The main reason why I would go to school at this point is for networking and to learn from your peers and collaborate with your peers, because it's amazing to be in like a hub where everyone's like-minded and you can learn just as much from the guy next to you that's a nerd about Ableton than you could about your professor, who may or may not be relevant. The music industry moves so quick. A lot of times the young kids know what's up. That's my opinion on it. Just in my case, where I didn't really have a scholarship or the money to burn, it didn't seem worth it to me, and this seemed like a better path.
You said, I'm learning how to produce at school, and then people said, but you're going to be an artist. So I was just curious how you differentiate them, if at all.
I think that was more of, I was wanting to go to audio school to learn how to be a pro mixer, which, for those that don't know, the producer is the one that oversees the creation and arrangement of the music. The producer would be the one to record the guitar or oversee that process or program the drums and record the vocals and arrange all the background vocals. Then they would send all those individual audio tracks, one track for the bass guitar, one for the kick and the snare and the vocal. They would send all those individual tracks to a mixer, and the mixer is the one that balances all those and makes them sound pretty together as one final audio file. I wanted to go to school to just focus on that, and they told me, hey, like, you're an artist. They kind of just recognized that I wanted to be an artist, and why was I not 100% focused on pursuing the artist thing? So the difference at this point, honestly, everything's at the same time intertwined. Like, it's all creative to me. my writing process now is very, very cohesive with my producing. What I mean by that is, let's say I'm in a session with two co-writers and we're in my bedroom studio and we write a song. As we write the song, I'm producing out a demo for it. So I'm programming some drums and putting the 808s in and recording some guitar, and we're recording some demo vocals over it just so we can create a vibe and hear the whole song come together at once. It's a very cohesive process and I think it's really fun to work that way. So it's kind of
all-encompassing.
Yeah, all the processes blend into each other.
Is the mixing and mastering the worst part?
Dude, it's funny. I saw this guy I follow on Instagram. He's an artist. His name's Ben Kessler. He posted on his story today, and someone asked him on his Q&A, how long does it take you to make a song? He said, it takes me like a day to make 80% of it, and then it takes infinity amount of time to finish the last 20%. And that's totally how it is for me, too. The mixing, like the finalization stage, is very tedious and very frustrating at times. It's when you start to lose, especially if you wrote and produced the song, by the time you're mixing it and finalizing it, you're really sick of the song at that point usually. You've heard it so many times, it's not as exciting to you anymore, so it's tough for sure. That's why I try to finish as much as I can as quickly as possible while the inspiration's fresh and while you're still stoked on it to get as far as you can. Maybe I'm just in my head. Otherwise, like right now I have 10 demos that I've heard one way for so long that once I go back and dive in to finish them, sometimes it's hard to know where to go because you've heard that one demo so many times and that's just the way the song is now. So it's definitely a battle, but we get through it somehow.
You talked about in one interview the idea of being vulnerable in songs. Do you have any type of process or outlet when you might not be in the most vulnerable headspace?
Yeah, there's this big movement around songwriting being vulnerable right now, which I think is really cool and positive, and I love it. At the same time, a lot of artists I talk to, a lot of artists I write with, and this is totally fine, I don't think less of them for this, but a lot of artists can't or refuse to put anything out that's not 100% vulnerable them. I don't necessarily see it that way. While I try, songwriting is about storytelling. It's like if I was to sit down and write a fictional novel. So I'm totally okay with writing a song about an experience that I have literally never had, but it's a cool song and it tells a story about someone that someone could relate with. I think that's part of the beauty of songwriting and creativity. Billie Eilish is someone that's talked about that a lot, which I think is dope. Like one of her songs talks about how she killed her friend and they're in the backseat in her trunk.
Or like all of them.
Yeah, exactly. All of them say that. The point is, of course, she didn't do that, but it makes for a cool song that people like to listen to and it's cool imagery. And I just think that as songwriters, we should have the freedom to be able to do that. Honestly, a lot of my songs are based on real experiences. Every once in a while, I write something that's not necessarily about me. Like my song Gemini wasn't about a specific experience. It's just an emo song because I wanted to write a sad song. Maybe I pull from past experiences, but it's not always this is happening to me right now.
I totally understand what you're saying. And I think that's an interesting, not just point, but almost a counter movement to the 100% vulnerable.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I look at someone like Lauv and I feel like, man, I hope he's not that sad.
Yeah, that was the inspiration between one of the lyrics and feeling myself as, what's up with all these sad boys? I feel bad boy that you sad boy. Even though I'm this guy sometimes too, I'm kind of a little bit tired of everyone being a sad boy. So that's why I wrote that lyric.
You had the Screamo band. Have you collaborated with any of them recently?
My brother, who is in the hardcore band, we still collaborate all the time. Especially now I'm producing his artist project, or at least several of the songs. Oh, he's the artist on Bipolar Heart. So he's the other artist on Bipolar Heart.
Oh, okay.
And he wrote on Care. He wrote on You're So Weak. And he was the screamer. When did I sell out? When will I learn to trust myself? Where am I when the lights go out? When the lights go out, I guess I really lost myself. I'm trying to be someone else. Yep, he was the screamer.
Okay, so it's Bipolar Heart that we need for the screamo version of.
Yes, exactly. I'm gonna get that to you.
You described each song as a color, and that was the inspiration behind naming this project or series of projects Color. Is there anything that spawned that idea?
The concept of color felt right because one of my goals for 2020 was I wanted to put out more music than I ever had before in a year. I put out 12 songs. They're going to be cohesive because I'm writing them with collaborators and I'm self-producing and singing on all of them. So even if a track is a little bit different, it's probably going to sound like me. But that being said, I wanted the songs to feel like different shades, different moods, different soundscapes, different experiences. And there's definitely songs on the project that are similar to each other. But you'll see when part two comes out that I think the album is pretty eclectic and I think there's some curveballs in there. So I'm really excited to share them because they're just different parts of my musicality that I haven't really shown yet. Like I haven't really shown the part of me that loves Latin music and the part of me that likes a really, really slow ballad, the more R&B side to my influences or the more urban hip hop influences that I tend to pull from a lot.
I feel like this is a horrible pun. No shade to any of the colors. But which color is your favorite?
That's a hard question.
I meant like no shade to whatever song doesn't align with this color.
I think the song that I go back and listen to most and am not sick of it is Bipolar Heart. I'm just really proud of that one.
Wait, so what color is that?
That's so funny. My favorite color is blue, so that works out.
There we go.
Because Bipolar Heart was the blue and pinks. Oh, also, to anyone who's interested, I have merch for all the colors. So I have this Bipolar Heart hoodie. If you just go to adamshirleymusic.com/store, there's a bunch of cool merch that's related to some of the songs. So check it out.
If people have Mom Spaghetti swag and Adam Turley merch, they'll be set for a whole weekend in normal times or a full week in quarantine. Stick around for some new music and to the end for Adam's answer to the Mom Spaghetti signature question. For this episode's non-Adam pick of the week, we've got Alexander 23's Cry Over Boys. It's his most recent single since his collab with Jeremy Zucker, Nothing's the Same, and this one is self-produced as well. Alexander added a little more drums to the second hook, and I really can't decide which time I like it more, so of course I'll play both. He shared, "The song is about the loop of romanticizing romance at the cost of our own sustainable happiness.
How many nights can you spend staying in your pillow with makeup when you're really upset? It's so annoying to take off just to do it again. Oh, what's the point in dressing up to be let down? Aren't you tired of getting hurt? Aren't you sick of making it worse?"
I feel like Jeremy Zucker's influence on Alexander 23 in Cry Over Boys is so tangible. In a Beats 1 interview with Zane Lowe, Alexander 23 said about finding love, "It's counterintuitive because the only way to actually find love is to put yourself out there and be willing to get hurt. But at the same time, it's so easy to look for love so hard that you actually sacrifice your own sustainable happiness and your own long-term love." Wow. Well said, Alexander 23. Here comes that second hook with more production.
How many nights can you spend staying in your pillow with me? It's so annoying to take off just to do it again. Oh, what's the point in dressing up to be let down? Aren't you tired of getting hurt? Aren't you sick of making it worse?
At a certain speed on the interstate, everything looks the same.
Next up is Everything We Need from A Day to Remember, which really is bringing back memories of my middle school punk pop days, because it totally sounds like that. John Bellion co-wrote this one, and vocalist Jeremy McKinnon said it's about realizing you have everything in life you need right now. Cause I know I got you, and you know you got me. We got everything we need. We got everything we need. Yo, this song is my jam. It's Marfl, Jan Muller, and Silo together on Lie to Me. Last year I featured Jan Muller's song San Francisco, which is also my ish, and I just love all this music like this. It's that soft EDM that's perfect for beach day vibes, which is now making me very excited for a vaccinated summer. The Italian singer-songwriter Marfl handled the vocals, while the French Jan and mysterious Silo took care of the production. All parties crushed it, so now we vibe. You never meant to lie to me. Did you mean to love, 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 love? You never meant to lie to me. The German production duo Gamper and Dadani took Soren's Julia, remixed it, and this is the final product. Soren is the singer-songwriter from Montreal with a Japanese mother and French father who played a number of instruments. And for Gamper and Dadani, whenever I stumble across their name, it always takes me back to 2014 when I discovered their Bulletproof remix, yes, the one by LaRue, that is absolutely fire and, sadly, still not on the streaming platforms. Otherwise, you know it'd be in this episode. Here's Julia. I featured the duo Elijah Woods and Jamie Fine a few times on Mom Spaghetti, and this is Elijah's debut solo single, Lights. The Ontario native writes, sings, and produces, and took care of all three here on Lights. While this is the first song with Elijah's name on the artist line, he did produce a hit single already this year. That was when he added production to Jessia's I'm Not Pretty from TikTok. Baby, I know this might sound crazy. Drop by your place lately. The lights keep coming on. Why the lights keep coming on? Oh yeah, been 6 months since I saw ya, and I know we're moving on. Oh, yeah, the lights keep coming on. Why the lights keep coming on? Yeah, the lights keep coming on. Yeah, the lights keep coming on. Why the lights keep coming on? So close, I remember the days when we went and bought a couch. And sleeping on the floor cause we both couldn't wait. Straight out of a movie, on your face. Fast forward a year and a month, and the pain got
darkness.
Did someone just say TikTok? Yes, I did, Kesha, but not in the way that you did over a decade ago. The California native is back, this time lending her vocals to the Dutch DJ producer Sam Felt on his track Stronger. The notes online suggest it was originally just a Kesha song, and then she sent it to Sam for help with the production. He also added, "The message Kesha sends with this track is really inspiring and super relevant in these turbulent times. That's why I knew I had to be part of it." This one picks up a little bit, I promise. It's got this dope drop that's totally in this chill, lo-fi, almost makes you not want to study, but you totally could study to it when it does drop. Before we get there, this is Modal with Giver, and I just want to ask, who else you know would put you onto this song? Modal is the moniker chosen by the 23-year-old Nick from Virginia, and I'm gonna have to do a deeper dive on Modal because I'm telling you, I can't get enough of this drop. My favorite artists to come on the show is Lost Boy Crow, and since then he's changed up his style a lot and I am obsessed. Strawberry Sunscreen was one of my most played tracks last year, so I had to include it in my top 100 of 2020. It finally showed up on a full project last week, Valley Heart, and this is one of my other favorites from it, Candy Wine. It's just something about this whole vibe that feels so summery and like drive-in movies. Lost Boy Crow came on the show, I realized I don't just love his music, I love Chris. He's such a good dude, and so I hit him up and asked him about Valley Heart, and he responded with this.
Valley Heart is my favorite version of me that I've been able to share with people. I'm so happy with how it turned out, and the feeling, and the colors, and the brightness, and the naive hopefulness that it's able to encompass. I'm so happy that it's out. Thank you so much for the support.
Always, Chris. Last one I saved from Valley Hard is The World's Always Been Ending. When I saw Lost Boy Crow live, he was touring with Joan, and I feel like the instrumentation they do had a huge effect on him, which I'm stoked to hear because I am totally digging his interpretation of that style. The part I'm about to turn up is great, and also reminds me of a band or a song I can't quite place. Producer Sarcastic Sounds has been everywhere lately, so I'll focus on him in a sec. This is his latest Change Your Mind with Claire Rosencrantz and Clinton Kane, who last year was on Martin Garrix's Drown. Sarcastic Sounds is the Canadian youngster Jeremy Fedrick, who, when he was a teenager, uploaded beats to YouTube and originally went by the name Sarcastic Asshole. He only changed it to Sounds when he decided that he wanted to sell the beats he was making. He competed in a beat battle in Toronto called The Beat Makers when he was 18, and one of the judges there was Manny Fresh from Lil Wayne's label. Manny Fresh loved one of the beats Sarcastic Sounds played so much that he took it to Lil Wayne, who in turn also loved it and wound up using it for his song Mahogany on his 2020 album Funeral.
First time that we met, I thought you were the one. We were dancing at 2 a.m. until we saw the sun. You walked into my heart, but hearts don't always end up in the right place. I said goodbye to the thing that I thought I loved. I can't go back to the kiss where it all begun. I see the hurt in your face. I wish that I could wipe it.
It's not that I'm over you, not over girl.
Brent Faiyaz's vocals are always smooth, and it's no exception here on Gravity. He's joined by DJ Dahi and Tyler the Creator, who sounds incredible here. In fact, the whole track sounds like it could fit easily on Tyler's album Flower Boy. Brent said the track is about a woman holding you down through the ups and downs.
Don't act like I'm average. You want me home. I get you what you want.
Superstar status.
From afar, hard to be down to earth when you nesting on Mars. You comment on how I move, too much space to assume, but I'ma tell you the truth here now. When I'm gone and I roam around the globe for 3 months, that's too long. Without something that's sweet, so I fall in the streets. That's a snack, not a feast. They don't need much to eat, cause I know that I have a
little booty. these matter. You don't need a rotund tonka. Baby, I still roll up on it.
We like to have fun here at Mom Spaghetti, and what better way to start to close out an episode than with Little Booties Matter from West Period. The La Habra, California native put this one out last week, and I still don't know how I feel about it. It's so dumb and so catchy, but it's not the first song to be both.
Cause little booties matter too, and I couldn't love you anymore if it was three times fatter. True, as long as that bubble pops on me, cause little booties matter.
I need that glutamus maximus. I swear you the only masochist. Even when it hurts, I'm a masochist. Just for you. For that booty, I'm an advocate. Don't think I could be more adamant anymore. By the toe, I choose you, you, you. When I wake up on that booty, I'ma lay up on that booty. I might pray up on that booty. Yes, true, true, true. Spend my days up on that booty. Just to gaze upon that booty.
Aw, yeah, that's right, fam. We made it to the outro. Hey, Adam, want to introduce your TBT pick to those unfamiliar?
All right, my favorite throwback is What a Fool Believes by the Doobie Brothers.
Nice. All right, Adam, now let's keep you on the stage before I TB teach the listeners about this 1978 classic. All right, Adam, suppose someone gifts you a vinyl record player, and along with it, they're willing to purchase the first five albums to get you started on your collection. What would you choose for your first five records to start the collection, Adam Turley?
Okay, in no particular order, this is what I would get. Number one, Continuum by John Mayer. Cosmic by Bozzy, I think will forever be one of my favorites. Purpose by JB.
That one's so good.
Yep, I've been a believer my whole life, so. I don't even know how to pronounce this album, but it's the Coldplay album called Milo Zloto. It's an album that has Charlie Brown on it and Paradise. I love that album. And number five, Loser by Sasha Sloan.
Thank you, Adam. All great choices. And now for the throwback. What a Fool Believes was off of the Doobie Brothers' eighth studio album, Minute by Minute. And since we only have a few minutes, we'll just do an assortment of fun facts about the band, this song, and that Grammy tidbit I hinted at during the intro. What a Fool Believes was co-written by Doobie Brothers member Michael McDonald and Kenny Loggins, the same one who wrote Footloose. Potentially even more interesting, Loggins not only recorded his own version of this song, he also released it as part of his sophomore album Nightwatch, which hit shelves before Minute by Minute, the Doobie Brothers record that included this version. Supposedly, Kenny let the Doobie Brothers release it as a single. Second of three notes, the aforementioned Michael McDonald was not in the band at its inception, and that inception is the focus of how they got their name. When living together as a band in San Jose, their next door neighbor was a musician named Keith Dino Rosen, who heard the group was having difficulty coming up with the name. He retorted, "Why don't you call yourself the Doobie Brothers because you're always smoking pot?" The band agreed it was a dumb name, and while they did pledge to change it when they came up with a better one, they also reluctantly performed with it as their stage name in the interim. Of course, a better name never struck. Lastly, the Grammys. What a Fool Believes won both Song of the Year and Record of the Year at the 1980s Grammys, and one of the songs it beat out in both categories was Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive. Yep, it's true. I'll keep my comments to myself in honor of Adam's TBT. In the Song of the Year category, a fascinating fact is that another song that What a Fool Believes beat out was Minute by Minute, the title track from that same Doobie Brothers album. I feel like there are a few incredible trivia questions that could stem from that, like name an album that had two Grammy tracks the same year, and especially if one of them took the award. But we can answer that another time. It's been a pleasure hosting the show, especially with my man Adam.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Keith. Super awesome that you're doing this. I think it's really dope.
Of course, Adam. And you know you're always welcome back. Now, close out one time for the people.
Hey, guys. I'm Adam Turley. Thank you so much for listening to Mom's Spaghetti, where everyone eats.
Hey, thank you, Adam. And thank you for tuning in to Mom's Spaghetti. Hit that subscribe button, share with your friends, and follow me on the gram at Mom's Spaghetti Pod. I'm your host, Keith Cohen, and that's a wrap.
She gave it to her, and then I got a text within 15 minutes It was from the girl that had just broken up with me, and she said, "Hey, we need to talk." So we met at the park, and she got back together with me. She loved me.
Wow.
Yep, that's what happened.
And then you were like, "Music will always get me what I want."
Yeah, except for I had a few experiences after that that did definitely not work. So it doesn't always work, guys.
What was the text on? Did you have like a razor?
Dude, that's a good question. Ninth grade, what did I have? I remember I bought my first phone from Cricket.
Damn. Well, that was because you were like the fifth kid and they were like, just.
Yeah, they're like, just fend for yourself. It was one of those ones that like slid up. It like slid to the side.
Was that a Sidekick?
So it was the Samsung version of that.
Yeah.
But I remember loving it.